Just in case we missed that about your father, you said was born in a...
That was the custom in the day. In those days, the birth of the child took place in the sauna rather than in the bedroom of the house. Why this was so, I really don't know.
Well, did anybody say there's any difference between a male child or a female child? Anything different they would do?
No. I'm not saying that there isn't any difference. I'm saying I don't know.
How long would they stay in the sauna? Would they like camp out there for a day or?
I really don't know. I only know that building immediately had such a special significance to me because of the whole idea about the birth of the new child and the choice of the sauna as being the place where it should be. But somehow it seemed quite right.
Yeah, it would be.
Yes, and when we went home for my father and mother's 50th wedding anniversary, we had a family reunion. My children were exposed to a sauna for the first time, and since then they have said that they wish that we would add a sauna to our hot springs baths. And I do miss it. However, when my father made his first trip to visit us, we were very anxious for him to take a bath in the hot springs because we wanted to hear what his reaction would be in contrast to a sauna. And so he went down, took his bath, and as soon as he came in the door, you know, everybody was asking him, how was it? He said, well, it wasn't better than a sauna, but it was as good. And I don't know of any individual who enjoyed our hot springs baths as much as my father did. Even on his last trip up there, when he was in his late 70s, he would go in there, he'd take coffee with him, the instant coffee, and they said that when he went in there, he would splash around, and he was a big man, 6 feet tall and way over 200 pounds. And he would splash around in the water just like a little kid. And then when he got exhausted, he would have his cup of coffee. And then he'd go back in and he'd splash around some more. And then he'd float around leisurely in there and just have a thoroughly good time.
Well, maybe you could describe other parts of the house now, too. Like, well, what the kitchen was like, what kinds of things were in there.
Well, of course, the kitchen was the center of the life, you know, just like the any of the farmhouses that you saw at that time, because the kitchen is so much a center of the social life as well. I can remember more visiting being done in the kitchen than in the living room, almost, or equally as much, anyway. My mother was a fabulous cook, and her mother was as well as her sister. In fact, her mother was a professional cook. And I can remember the wood stove. There was the wood stove used. In fact, for their 25th wedding anniversary, my father gave my mother a gas range, and he said it was the silver trimming on the chrome trimming on the stove that signified the special silver anniversary. But I can remember the wood stove being very much a part of the my life as a child, for the heat as well as the smells of the cooking, because you sat around the stove a lot on cold days. Because we were a large family, we were a crowded family, you know, as well. There was a lot of closeness. You never slept alone. You slept two, and it wasn't on cold nights. You slept three, and you got to bed first so you could be in the middle.
What would happen to the people on the edges?
I don't know. We never had that problem about people falling off. You just kind of snuggled in there.
A lot of people in Alaska wouldn't, particularly in the villages, wouldn't know anything about Minnesota and what the weather is like. Maybe you could describe a little bit of that.
Well, I only know that I've suffered more so from winter cold in Minnesota than I have in Alaska. And the big difference there, between there and here, is the difference in the humidity. You have a humid cold there because you have the influence of the lakes. We were about 60 miles from Lake Superior. And you have that humid cold that is so penetrating. This is essentially semi-arid country up here. It just doesn't appear so to us visually, because the precipitation that does fall here, so much of it stays here for so much of the year. If this were in a different latitude, it would be quite a different situation. But this is one of the things that I really noticed when I went back home. I went back home one year in November, and we opened one of the bedrooms upstairs and slept in a bed that, when you entered the bed, you had you just felt kind of a damp cold that. You know, and this is what we must have felt, that you just don't have up here. It's just makes all the difference in the world. I can remember having gone through 57 degree or below weather in Minnesota, and you know, you were really homebound. And in Hot Springs, I can remember walking to school one morning when there was a the cold spot in town was 75 below. And probably another difference is up here, we're prepared for cold weather, and we dress accordingly. And so we can be comfortable at it in a way that I wouldn't have been in Minnesota. I would have been far more comfortable in Minnesota with the parka with the fur lining and mukluks than the Sears Roebuck winter gear that we did wear.
So people in Alaska wouldn't know what warm clothes were.
Well, they could have learned from the Alaska natives, surely. A lot they could have learned. But also, you have winds there. For example, when we have our winter storms here in the interior, you don't have the winds. As soon as winds occur, your temperature rises. In Minnesota, we used to have these horrible blizzards that when I was going to high school, we traveled 25 miles one way to school. And when there were blizzard warnings, we would be let out of school early. And I can remember one time when we were not let out early enough, and we ended up walking with hands together, you know, in chained, linked with hands, walking to a farmhouse because we had to abandon the bus stuck in the snow and didn't get home for 3 days. And here, when you have snows, you have beautiful snowfalls. You don't have the blizzards that we had to contend with there. That was another important difference. There in the summertime, they have the thing that I miss here that we had in Minnesota in the summertime were those fantastic electrical thunderstorms. And we've had them in hot springs probably a half a dozen times in the time that I've, in all of the years that we've lived there, and more so just in the last few years. But that's one of the reasons I like this country, is the lack of wind. I'm not, I don't enjoy winds that much. But I probably associate them with the penetrating cold of Minnesota's winters.
So what kind of preparation would your family make for the winter? And when would you start preparing, for instance, getting wood and getting clothes out, and talking about winter coming?
Very similar to what it is up here. The food that you grew, you harvested around the same time that you did up here. Your winter you prepared for at the same time. Your springs came earlier. And that made for the longer growing season. We have as long a growing season up here, but that's due to the long days. There, they make up for it in number of days. So you don't find that much difference in the growing season between the two. Mm-hmm. Berry picking, the difference in the blueberries, from up here, the blueberries are so tart. And there, back home, the wild blueberries are the very sweet ones. Of course, in Minnesota, you don't have many of the berries that we have up here, or not as many, like the cranberry. And one thing that my father mentioned when he came to Alaska on his first visit too was, he said, in many ways this is like coming home to Finland, because he saw the many many similarities. The midnight sun, of course, because many parts of Finland you have the same latitude. The cranberries, and the blueberries. He noticed immediately the similarity in the blueberries, the tartness of the blueberries up here in contrast to the sweetness of the Minnesota ones.
So would you go out and help cut wood and things like that too?
Because there were so many children, and I had two older sisters, I was quite the tomboy when I was young, and I had a chance to exercise that a lot. So I never learned how to cook until afterwards I was married. You know, if it was a painting job, or yes, I did go out. I was very close to the brother who was younger than I when I was raised as a child. So we spend a lot of time doing things together. I would have to do things like dishes or sweeping, which I detested, but I was able to push off on my older sisters a lot of that simply because they were so much better at it than I was. I feel guilty about that to this day. And There were things like, although my father had these businesses, these number of sources of income, we also did have cows for our own, just to supply the family with milk and butter. We would, of course, then be concerned with like haymaking activities in the summertime. And our job would be to bring morning coffee break and afternoon coffee break supplies to the haymakers out into the fields and that type of activity. Those were the things that I was good at. Anything inside the house related to homekeeping, I was really terrible at.
Well, how was it staying in this house with the, you say it was sort of crowded. How many, there's maybe two or three people sleeping in a bed. How many people staying in one room?
Well, actually, the we had a lower floor, and there were rooms for extra bedroom down there. And my father and mother also had the large bedroom down there. But the top floor was just one whole space. But then we had, it was partitioned off with temporary partitions. And how many beds or rooms would be partitioned off with temporary partitions would have to do with the number of children that were home at the time. And when I speak about the crowded conditions, of course, I'm talking about the times when everybody was home. And because of the number of children, and children had to leave home as soon as they were old enough to look for jobs because the jobs weren't there, the younger children in the family seemed like it seemed almost like two separate families in that sense. Like we can talk about the way our childhood was, and then you can talk to the youngest members of the family, and the way they were brought up was quite different simply because there just weren't the numbers there. Like my mother had, my mother and father had 12 children, but the common saying was, yes, mother has 12 children, but she raised at least 25 because there were always other people there. And because my father was a minister, and he was an evangelistic minister, and he would travel a lot because it was the Finnish Apostolic Lutheran Church. And they would travel to other places where there were Finnish members. So he, because they also gave their sermons in Finnish. And it was sometimes English too, but it was mainly Finnish. And he would travel from coast to coast to, and he would receive invitations, and how much he traveled depended upon these invitations. But he also, you know, and how much he traveled would depend upon how much he wanted to be away from home. After the children left, it was only my mother and my father, they were traveling constantly. But I can remember from the time I was a very young child, when I was still in early elementary school, I can remember my father and mother going to, making a trip to New York, you know, and being gone for some time. And it was in the line of his duties as an evangelistic minister.
Was he well known, or was this something that most of the evangelistic ministers did?
Well, his, the number of invitations that you received to these various parts of the country depended upon how you were received upon the congregation. I think it was probably a tribute to his abilities. My father was a very charismatic character. He could walk into a room. My husband tells me of a meeting where my father entered into a room and there were mostly strange people around, and it was in a very short time he was the center of attention in that room. You know, he had that type of appeal. But he also had this very definite, sincere, and aggressive type of interest in a lot of people. You know, I can remember him coming home from one of his trips, and and just a few hours later, he would be in a very involved meeting of friendship with the town drunk. You know, he had a very non-judgmental approach in his friendships with people, which is almost in contradiction to the fact that he was an evangelistic Lutheran minister. Yeah, although with my father, I can remember my mother talking about my father being her talking machine, and this is like when we had company, and we frequently did have company that would come from longer distances. They were members of the church, you know. They would come, and they would frequently be overnight guests and sometimes guests for several days. And my mother spent a lot of her time just in preparation, food preparation, because she had a large family. And then, of course, when you have company, it's also true, even if the company doesn't number that many people. But my father did the entertaining, and my mother took care of the caring. And when my father passed away and my mother was left alone, she said that was the biggest adjustment she had to make, because she was so used to this position of just being in the kitchen doing her thing, which she felt very comfortable with, and suddenly put into this position of also entertaining the guests. And she did adapt, but she said it was her biggest adjustment.
What kinds of things did you do
You mean in terms of company?
In terms of just yourselves.
Now, very little inside of the house activities, as far as, especially in the summertime. Oh, yeah, there were activities, quiet activities, quiet type of games and reading and that type of thing. But the boys were very sports-oriented, and they were all very very good at sports. And consequently, because we were a small town and there frequently weren't enough to play, the girls got drawn into it too. So I can remember from the time that I was very small being very active in many of the sports. For example, we would frequently have to be part of a football team when the boys became interested in football, and I can remember playing baseball from the time I was very small, and becoming good enough in it to be a member of the school team, which was a combination of a boys and girls team, being a pitcher on it for several years. And we were also very active in other types of sports, you know, the regular track meet type. And we used to do this, you know, constantly. A favorite activity in summer evenings when we were also long distance running. There would be some of us that would start. There was this square, a road that was shaped like a square, and it was essentially a mile run. And we would start off in two separate teams, and race to see who would get there first. You know, coming around this square, and we would start from right at the steps of my father's store. And there would be many adults who would come and just watch this and do all of the activities that were involved in track meets, you know, the general things. We did a lot of swimming. We would there would be the little swimming holes that we could walk to. But also, we would all get together and use a truck, you know, so there would just be a truckload in the back and go off to the nearest river and swim for hours. In the wintertime, it was skating and sledding and not skiing for some strange reason. But very active skating.
The outdoor skating?
Mm-hmm. And we would go to creeks or rivers that would be open, but I can also recall my one of my older brothers spending just hours of time every winter making an icy path around our property. And he made all kind of intricate designs as he made this icy path that he maintained. And he became really quite an excellent skater just using that, simply because it was convenient. Because when we started high school, we would have to leave at 7:30 in the morning, and we wouldn't get home until 5 o'clock in the evening. So there wasn't that much time after you did your chores and your schoolwork as well.
So this path, all of you would skate in it after school?
But, of course, he had priority, and we had to maintain certain standards because, of course, it wasn't that wide to begin with, you know, to maintain. And he would, he had priority on it since he maintained it.
How did he make it?
Just with buckets of water. It was really needed a lot of devotion and hours of preparation. But he did this for several winters, I can remember, as a child. Another thing that we used to do, which was just unique to our town, because it was a logging industry, as I said, they had these lumber yards, you know, which are just warehouses that are just empty buildings, essentially, with places to store lumber in, and there would be platforms that at about three different levels, and they would extend quite high. And there were some really freakish things that happened in that fire, where certain buildings stayed intact, where everything else in the area was just ruined. And there were a couple of these buildings left in the town. And, of course, they weren't of any use anymore because there wasn't any logging industry. And those became you know, giant playhouses for us. And I can remember we used to go into this lumber warehouse and play tag. And it would mean running along these narrow planks and jumping from platform to platform. And when you were at the highest level, you were a considerable distance from the ground. You were probably 25, 30 feet off the ground. And so, and there would be the studs that you would use to hang on to while you were running along. And it's just amazing that in all of the time, all of the years that we spent in there, that there never was a major accident, because every once in a while somebody would fall some distance, you know, like from the ceiling to the floor here, and not be hurt. And to this day, I am scared of heights. If I would have to climb a tower, I would find it very terrifying. Because I was running along one of those narrow platforms and or pieces of timber, and hanging on like a monkey to the studs as I was going along it. And all of a sudden, both hands let go. And I had this just this brief instant of falling this tremendous distance from near the roof down to the ground. And that feeling has stayed with me through the years. And I still panic whenever I am at a height for that reason. And I think it's associated just with that one incident. But we were very, very active physically. And a lot of it had to do with the fact that the older brothers were athletic. They were members of football teams, basketball teams, wrestling teams, and this type of thing in high school.
What kind of chores did you have after school? You mentioned women and
children. Well, of course, there were the cows to be milked and dishes to be washed and smaller children to be babysat with or that type of thing.
Well, you mentioned cows.
This,
what else did you have there in the way of farm-type animals and gardens? How large a place was it?
My mother had always liked chickens and turkeys, and every once in a while she would have them. I don't remember having them year after year, but I remember having them some years. And but the cows we had right up until the time that there were only the smaller children left at home. So I remember them all through my childhood. And as far as gardens were concerned, the largest one, of course, was the potatoes. Everybody had large potato fields. And in the spring, you went from farm to farm helping with the planting of the potatoes. And in the fall, you went from farm to farm helping to dig them up. And it was, in fact, they used to have a vacation every fall from school where you, it was potato digging week. But also, my mother was always interested in gardening, and we always had a large vegetable garden. And then she would always have her little special things. Tomatoes were some of her specialties. And she did a lot of canning. And, of course, there was the berry picking.
So for your food, relied heavily on the things you gardened.
Yes, despite the fact that my father had the store, you know, where things were more reasonable for us. Nevertheless, we also did grow a lot of our own things, and my father was also an excellent hunter. So venison was always a part of the winter supply of meat.
What other kinds of things would he have for?
Birds. Pheasant hunting was quite popular there. That's actually the only bird that I remember from my childhood that my father hunted for. For some reason, that was excellent pheasant hunting country. And it was excellent enough, so I remember hunters from the Twin Cities, Minneapolis and St. Paul, coming up and during hunting season.
How far away was the Twin Cities?
About 150 miles, which was a long distance in those days.
Well, since you had just mentioned your father's store, maybe you can describe that. How big was it? Was it the only store in the town?
Yes, it was the only store in the town from my childhood. But he had also disaster struck on two different occasions. My father had a total of three stores. The first two were destroyed by fire after this big 1918 fire. And one of them was destroyed when I was too young to remember. The first one, I can remember it, I was in the first grade. It was in 1930. And I can remember looking out of the window of the school and seeing our store being destroyed in flames. And it was a general store, and he had everything in it. It was, besides the general merchandise that supplied a countryside farming community, he had a gas station. He had a feed store combined with it, which meant feed for animals. And, of course, the post office. And in that first store, I even remember him setting up a barber chair. You know, the swivel, the all of the equipment that you would need to operate a barbershop, because my father did a lot of hair cutting. And when that was destroyed by fire, as he did with the first one that was destroyed by fire, the next day he was in business in an empty house in town. And he would just, of course he wasn't insured in those days, and he would just build up a new business again with the excellent credit that he had. And the last store that he had, he... And, of course, he would build his own. The last store that he had the post office, a feed store, and a general store, but he didn't have the barbershop. And for refrigeration, he went out. He had one of the rooms in the store was a cool room, and he got his own ice in the wintertime. So he had a shed on the property, and he would go out on the lakes and cut these huge chunks of ice and haul them in, and then they would be covered with sawdust. And that sawdust would keep the ice intact as long, so he had a year's supply of it from one spring to the next fall.
When he built his stores, was that out of lumber?
Yes, right. Uh-huh. And the last store that he had is still there. My mother sold it to the township, and it's the town hall of Altamira today.
The population of the town of those is still five.
It's five now. Uh-huh, right. Right, but the town hall is located there. In fact, they call it the Little White House.
Do people come back there for any reason? Are there other people that come through the town hall to use that?
My mother bought up a lot of the property in town, and my father. And as people moved away, and there are still just a couple of houses. There's only one other house that is occupied, and it's used as a vacation house by some people who live in the cities.
What was the population there, say, 1930, 1940?
Okay, when I was, it was sufficient, so we had a one-room school. And it wasn't a one-room school. It was a beautiful two-story brick building. But there weren't enough children there. So when I entered school, all of the children were in one classroom. And I went to school in that one room all 8 years. And the year that I graduated from the eighth grade, then that school was closed. And then they were consolidating schools. And the children who were going to elementary school went to a school that was 7 miles away. And high school, the closest high school was 25 miles away. And that's where all of the children in the family went to high school.
Would you be able to estimate what the population of the town was, say, in 1918? Before they had a big fire? That'd probably be the maximum population, I suppose.
As far as the population of the town itself, I know that there were six lumber mills that were going 24 hours a day. It wasn't that old of a town as far as that activity. It was the lumber industry was a relatively recent development and a very thriving one. And I don't remember population figures being talked about, and I have never looked them up. But they had a bank there, hotels there, and getting the population figures would be easy enough to do. I would just estimate that it would be a few hundred.
Similar in size to Ruby?
I would say probably a little bigger.
And then just gradually declining?
Very rapidly declining after the fire, because there was nothing to keep them there other than the farming. Except for my father, and he had essentially had control of all of the businesses in that one establishment. You know, there wasn't enough room there for another. There wasn't enough business there for another store. That's why he had to diversify.
Yeah, well, it sounds like a stadium anyway. So, like, when you went to first grade, the population might have been 100 people.
It was less than that, I think, by then.
Less than 100?
Uh-huh.
Are you getting ready to change tape just now?
Yeah.